This is the introduction of the War on Waste paradox, using the War on Waste to align strategy with process. Just a note here from me before I begin the reading. This is the first book I ever wrote. Originally, it was entitled The New Turnaround. A number of edition changes need to be done, and so I rewrote little things you should have learned from each chapter, in other words, the message I was trying to give, the introduction. This book evolved from discussions with several client CEOs and several productivity and innovation consultants. It still tells the same story about our war on waste and role that all employees play in business success. But it adds another dimension with the inclusion of the role that knowledge, particularly tribal knowledge, plays in any corporation. But the real addition to this book and the issue that has been evading us over the years is the discussion of what we get into in the book of what we have called the tribal knowledge paradox, or in the case of this book, the war on waste paradox. The owner of the business in this fictionalized story is the student of the book's illustrious consultant, that's me, who leads him to an understanding of what it is. But why call it the War on Waste paradox? What does tribal knowledge, or the War on Waste, have to do with this paradox? It turns out that effective change requires an honest engagement of all people and a consequent understanding of the company's tribal knowledge. And that observation is one of the major discoveries of the War on Waste process. Tribal knowledge is the collective wisdom of the organization. It is the sum of all the knowledge. It is the knowledge used to deliver, to support, or to develop value for customers. But it is also all the knowledge that is wrong, imprecise, and useless. It is the knowledge of the informal power structure and process, or how things really work and how they ought to. It is knowledge of who constrains the process and who facilitates it. It is the knowledge that is squirreled away by employees who feel a need to protect their jobs by not sharing the information needed to do their job. This is part of the totality of the company's tribal knowledge. For example, it is the knowledge and experience of the assembler who won't tell others how he could put the two casings together when no one else can. That knowledge is his job security. But more importantly, it is the untapped knowledge that remains unused or abused. This thought serves as one of the themes throughout this book. We call this book The War on Waste Paradox because effectively engaging the rank and file is contrary to most corporate organizations and structures, as well as outside the skill set of most managers. It is the actions of the executives and managers that create the various paradoxes noted in this book. And it is the same actions that create the grand paradox. As employees become engrossed in solving their problems during the war on waste, all aspects of the company are examined. When tribal knowledge is challenged, it is done so under the protection of no blame, a safe haven for generating ideas. We trademarked the no blame logo as seen in this book to illustrate to employees just how important ideas generated during the war on waste really are to the company. They are so important that we want to generate change without reprisal. Our unique approach to problem solving includes 567 forcing functions, yes-no charts, world record reports, all of which speed ideas into action. 567 is 67% of the benefit for 5% of the cost. That is a subset of the 80-20 rule, or 20-80 rule, that we discovered early in our work in this program. It is the way we manage all of our projects. We go into that more in the body of the book. In the book, we will also explain the power of yes-no charts and world record reports in the War on Waste. We equate the War on Waste, WOW, to a phase zero of innovation and action. Innovation occurs big time here because innovation is the conversion of an idea into action that improves the service to a customer, creates a new or improved product, or optimizes a production operation. And a lot of that is going on at Quality Pumps, the mythical company in this story. There are other byproducts of the work process. It provides a template for effective leadership by helping to define leadership best practices by example. It highlights the gaps between design strategy and implicit strategy, and then helps to provide the alignment. It ferrets out the barriers to innovation. It creates visibility to current capabilities and skills. It initiates a process of effective employee training, learn by doing. And finally, it focuses the organization on the more profitable parts of the business, the core business. In most cases, these ideas are usually incremental innovation. But we have found that even in phase zero, one out of six ideas is a big idea with over 100-to-1 benefit to cost ratio and represents any of the following types of innovation identified by Peter Drucker, that being disruptive innovation, organizational innovation, or business venture innovation. By the time that we have reached phase three of this process, we will have an organization innovation focused on finding and implementing big ideas. We will discuss more on these types of innovation later in the book. These big ideas make the payoff of our program spectacular. The ROIs are through the roof. Ideas are presented to management in this program, with employees submitting ideas based on waste that they can identify. As they turn the idea into action, it amounts to solving a problem defined by the rules of the War on Waste process. The War on Waste exposes the problem that may exist with employees as they try to deliver value. We have discovered that acting on these good ideas of employees leads to a change in the way we look at the work of the organization. We're not talking about just any work. We're talking about the right work. We have found that the resultant organization is different, is turned around from its previous predecessor. The new organization focuses on understanding the value-added functions of the business. This leads to a highly productive structure with the ability to change quickly in response to market demands, which in turn creates greater profits. On the surface, this book contains a fictionalized storyline. I wanted to tell a story as a way of illustrating a unique process for improving business, and I wanted the process to be understandable by a wide audience. So I created a central character in his family, friends, and coworkers out of a composite of folks and situations I have met and observed over many years. But the story behind the storyline is factually based. The reader who has never experienced a no-blame culture of innovation may dismiss the storyline I came up with a collection of unreal situations. However, you will be surprised at how real the story is when you begin your own journey. We have delivered the War on Waste to over 150 companies and their 50,000 employees. The process has been used effectively in a wide variety of businesses, from manufacturers, machine shops, and distribution companies, to hospitals, banks, and government agencies. This book, then, is a consolidation of those experiences. Most of the events have happened at one time or another in real life. I've changed the names of people and places and some specific events in the story to assure anonymity of the participants. As a tribute to the fact that the book pretty well resembles reality, I'll share this story. I sent copy of the book's final draft to some of my client CEOs. I scheduled lunch with three of them to discuss their initial reactions. As I arrived at the restaurant, I could hear people laughing loudly in the background. It was two of the CEOs that I was going to meet for lunch. About that time, the third CEO arrived. I asked about their loud laughing, and they began to laugh anymore. It turns out each of the first two had discovered they were both angry because they had thought I had written a book about their company. Then the third guy announced that no, in fact, he knew the book was about his company. The truth is, none of the above. The book was modeled mostly on two completely other organizations unknown to these three CEOs. The bottom line is the events of the story sound the same because similar events happen within so many different companies. I'll try to point these similarities out in the various chapter summaries. As you find out quickly in the book, the process described is a form of discovery for the participants. Each step offers a new learning. It is an enjoyable but difficult journey. The uncertainty of the process is painful for those who wish to preserve their old habits and systems of their own which they control. But the new system is more efficient, more productive, and more comfortable for all employees. Everyone is focused on maximizing the value delivered by the business. And not surprisingly, the new organization is a very pleasant place to work. The process of discovering this new system environment is what the book is about. The participants in this story discover a new way of looking at business and new measurements of success. The process takes its lessons from the Japanese, Henry Ford, Frederick W. Taylor, Adam Smith, and many others. We try to inculcate this concept of the 80-20 rule in a leveraged subset that we call the 567 thinking. This is a subset because we found that we are able to get 13 times return or leverage and speed for an application of the concept. 5 into 67 versus 80-20, where you get 4 times the leverage. So this concept is pervasive in our delivery because it allows far more rapid delivery of analysis and even faster delivery of results. As we will explain in the chapter Insights, this is a very powerful tool. And using these tools, the lessons are intended to lead both the participants and the reader on a journey of discovery of the new organization. On a grand scale, it can be said that the process allows all members of the organization to discover improvements in the work and missed market opportunities or profit offering. These improvements are quantified as wastes and implemented with low-cost solutions, high-value, low-cost solutions. Employees discover that changes occur very quickly when everyone has the same focus. Managers and workers alike see profit for what it really is, the lifeblood of the company. They discover that it is okay to talk about profits. We really even encourage employees to ask the very important question, what's in it for me? We like to turn this around by asking employees, do you listen to WIIFM? What's in it for me? As a little quick anecdote interjected here, one of the clients where I talked about it, he said, I don't get that station, because I hadn't told him yet about what it stood for. As the discovery process progresses, several crucial issues are exposed. The idea is the center of this system. No blame protects the idea in much the same way that freedom of assembly protects free speech. It doesn't do you very much good to have freedom of speech if you have no way to assemble followers to listen. This is the heart of the Tiananmen Square problem of China a number of years ago. The communist Chinese were touting to the world that they were allowing freedom of speech for all Chinese, but it was no good without freedom of assembly. If you want ideas and innovation to flourish in a company, then you need to invoke no blame and provide the opportunities to create. If someone is going to offer an idea, they need to know that they are doing so without the threat of reprisal from their managers or supervisors. Enjoy the book. Signed, Len Bertain, Oakland, California. Acknowledgements. A number of people have contributed to this book, both directly and indirectly. Mr. George Sibbald was an early contributor to the thinking that went into this manuscript. George and I have argued extensively about the different processes that exist in the War on Waste program. We continue to argue the merits of various approaches to the delivery of the program. He helped me get clarity in the use of the term tribal knowledge in the context of the War on Waste and on the War on Waste as phase zero of a three-phase process of incubating an effective culture of innovation and action. I have had a number of early guinea pigs that trusted my judgment enough to allow me to test my theories on their organization. Jim Henderson of Advanced Machine Programming, San Jose, California. Larry Lista of East Bay Generator, Oakland, California. Paul Bergeron of Pilgrim Fireplace Equipment Company, Richmond, California. Mike Barden of General Grinding, Oakland, California. Pat Perrin, Perrin Manufacturing, the City of Industries, California. Paul Rayuski of Microwave Computers of Cerritos, California. Dennis Gertmanian of Ready Pack Produce. C. Houston of Wells Fargo Bank, and many others. More recently, I've gotten a better understanding of the Quantum Leap Company from my work with Mike Betts of the Betts Spring Company, San Leandro, California, Nate Hamilton of Operon Technologies, Alameda, California, and Kenny Cloyd of Caltrust Company of Paris, California. These three organizations are excellent examples of companies that have made or about to make the quantum leap in business performance. I would especially like to thank the Employment Training Panel of the State of California, and particular thanks to Mr. James Quillen, now deceased, of the International Association of Machinists. He was a panel member. Jim was a real mentor for me in effective employee training. And I'd finally like to thank my wife for her patience while I have developed my consulting practice over the last 20 years and listened and critiqued a concept of self-publishing that is the basis of CEO University Press. I love you and thank you for your support. Len Bertain. That is the end of the introduction and acknowledgments of the War on Waste Paradox.